Hello, and welcome to I Am The Egg Pod, with me, Chris Shaw. The Egg Pods take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatle albums with a potpourri of delicious guests. In this episode, it's a joy to welcome back friend of the podcast, Matt Everett.
It's really nice to be back. It's nice to see you. It's nice to see anybody.
Oh, you were the last face-to-face person I interviewed.
Was I?
Back in March, I think it was. Yeah.
Sorry about that. I was the last interaction you had for the podcast. But you've been all right? Everyone's okay?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, I think we're all right. Yeah. The kind of the push and pull and ebb and flow of the same pressures lots of people are going through. But I think we're okay as a family. We're doing all right. You managed to get Sean Keaveney, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yes. You know him, don't you? I believe.
I would imagine it would be harder to get George Harrison to do the show than it would be to organise Sean, who is one of my dearest friends and I love him enormously, but he's one of the least organised people on the planet.
It did take quite a while, I have to be honest.
McCartney 5 has just come out and Sean's still fartassing about.
Bless him. Talking of which, the album we're talking about today is, I can't believe it, we're doing, on the day it's released, McCartney 3.
Yeah.
The final, well, hopefully not the final, in the trilogy.
No, there's going to be more. He started now. There's a bit of a gap between them, but why not, you know? Keep on putting them out. Yeah, this is going to be happening as people are hearing it for the first time as well, which is pretty exciting.
Absolutely.
What was your reaction when you started? Because obviously everyone was obsessing about the teasers and the little bits. Did you get incredibly excited? Of course you did.
Yeah.
Silly question, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Capitol, bless them. What I love about Capitol, you think back in the 60s, the way we've talked about it before, the way they messed around with the Beatles catalogue, it seems like they're repenting for that now with all this promo and all these teasers they're doing. And the teasers, I mean, were unbelievable. You had, I think it was initially a couple of tweets or on Instagram of pictures of dice.
Yeah.
Or dice emojis, and people were like, And then somebody mentioned that the domain name McCartney3.com had been bought. And then they started sending out promo dice to fans. And everyone was kind of, is it? And I can either keep this or cut it out. But
go.
You contacted me and
yes.
You said, I have a question. Hypothetically, if you could ask Macca anything, what would it be? Then there was another one. For a thing I'm doing. And then another one which just said, shh.
I think we can keep that in because, yeah, here we go. I got a chance to speak to him again, didn't I, about this record.
I know.
I think I was the first chat that he did about the record. He's since now done a bunch of really amazing kind of in-depth interviews. I listened to the Adam Buxton one yesterday. And it's just, it's lovely. But yeah, that sort of first opening salvo, the first grenade over the parapet was me, which was just, an amazing honour. So I was like, what am I going to do? And then I asked you.
Tell me the process. What happened? Did you get an email or a phone call or was it?
Well, as always, and I think this is something that Adam Buxton mentioned, when there's some other musicians, there's a massive rigmarole and there's hoops of fire to jump through and things to leap over and navigate in terms of what you can say and what you can't say and the sort of context. And there's a lot of people in the chain. If you're dealing with some artists, there's like, you know, you deal with like this promo person and another person, the PR and a manager. And it seems to be there's this ocean of people before you sort of reach, you know, the golden sphinx on the other side of your epic journey. But with all Macca's stuff, there's like really lovely dude at his label that I work with, and he's really lovely dude at his PR, and that's kind of it. So it's really lovely. They just kind of say, if this might happen, are you up for it? Yeah. Yes, I am. That would be nice. and then that's kind of how it happens. But there's I remember this before with, here we go, I'm going to do name dropping all the way through this, all the way, because that's what I do.
We're 5 minutes
in. Start now. When you, I've done a bunch of stuff with Radiohead, and it's a very similar thing. It's like they have a very small and totally lovely management team. Because I think when you've, if you deal with Metallica, who are also very nice, they have a vast, also lovely, but a vast team of people.
Yeah.
So I think if you've been doing it for a while and you're very famous, you just want, can I just have people that I quite like getting on with?
Trust.
And I trust and I can speak to and I don't have to, we don't have to make this a massive thing. It's the Stanley Kubrick story, isn't it? When someone went to go and visit him, another director went to go and visit him on the set of The Shining and was really surprised by the fact there was only about 8 people doing the film. There was like him, photographer, like it was a very tiny crew. And this other director was like, where's everybody else? And Kubrick said something along the lines of like, you don't need someone employed to go and get the bagels. You don't need someone to assist. Just have some people that know what they're doing. And that's all you need. And that's kind of what it's like in the Mac account, which is enormously heartwarming. I'm not saying it's not a big industry, Macca.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But everyone that you deal with, there's not many of them and they seem to be very lovely. And so, yeah, I got the call to do the chat.
What a compliment.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what I've done in a previous life to kind of earn this trust. I don't know. Hopefully. I still absolutely shit it, though. I still get really nervous because...
Really?
Well, you do, yeah. You do. And he's a very generous... He's a very generous interviewee. We talked about this before. He carries it very lightly, doesn't he? You do sort
absolutely,
of,
You do
sort of feel like he knows what he's doing. And we opened with a gag. Not even a gag, just a jokey comment. We said... I was like, first of all, Paul... Yeah. Have you got a big, massive McCartney 1 beard? Because surely in lockdown now is the time. And I bet you'd look good now with a big beard. And he was like, no, it just, you know, normally happens is I grow it for a couple of few days and, you know, I don't really like it. Nancy doesn't like it, so we get rid of it. And I thought, we haven't seen him with a beard for so long.
No. He'd have a big old silver Santa Claus one.
Macca Claus. It would be so good to see him with, like, or even just a big moustache, a big pepper moustache. Salt and pepper moustache. Yeah, it would have been quite nice. They could have recreated the cover of, or the back cover of One, with, like, him, with, like, I don't know, with sort of Mary, but as a grown adult in a jacket. Him with a big beard.
All the other way around.
All the other way around, yeah. So, I mean, it was a joyous... lovely experience. He was I didn't get a chance to ask the question that you asked, which was a great question, but then I didn't get a chance to ask the thousands of other questions that I wanted to ask. And he was really generous with his time, but yeah, there's a lot of questions and you just don't get time because you can't ask everything.
Thing is, I you obviously heard the Adam Buxton interview. What I loved about that was when he was just talking about the mundanities of day-to-day life, when things like watching Holmes on the hammer. And you think, that's more, it's not much, but it changes everything for me about Paul.
Yeah,
it
really makes me want to try bagels with hummus and Marmite, which is what he said his favourite snack was.
Yeah.
I'd never thought about that before. Now it's my favourite snack I haven't tried yet.
Yeah, a Big Macca.
Oh,
I think also
that's great.
That's coming out.
Okay,
and also, I love his the fact that he loves Vic and Bob.
Yeah,
and you think, well, Goons fans as kids, why would he would love Vic and Bob? He's still got that, you know, it's still teenage Macca listening to the Goons on the radio.
Yeah,
now he's watching Vic and Bob.
Oh, there's that.
So those sort of questions, you almost get more than because he probably wouldn't remember old 60s letters, would he, I guess.
Yeah, it was nice with that interview, and well done, Adam, because you can feel Macca, you can feel him warm up and or just relax a little bit, because Adam is just such a charming, funny, warm guy. And I hadn't heard the hitchhiking story before. That was new to me. The fact that he picked up a hitchhiker and all got a little bit potentially leery. And then he did a whole bunch of like all those stories. You know, the Beatles John stories that you just Oh, they make my heart sing. He's talking about John. That's all, yes. And yeah. did it once again with Gracious and even the Paul is Dead stuff, which he chatted about, which was just lovely to hear and talk about it because, yeah. But we pretty much focused on Macca, Macca 2, Macca 3 in our chat because they're all really good records, aren't they?
Similar to the other McCartney albums, McCartney 3 was pretty well unintentional. So at the beginning of lockdown, or as Paul's Rockdown, as he's calling it.
That's me putting my thumbs up.
And he was staying in a sheep farm with Mary, his daughter, we were just talking about, and his grandkids. And then he popped off to his little studio to record music for an animation of, oddly enough, When Winter Comes with Jeff Dunbar. But basically, he found he was enjoying it so much, he just kept going. And his quote, this is very Paul, was, "Oh, this is nice. I'm enjoying this. This is a nice way to spend lockdown." So he carried on, had a huge stockpile of tracks. And now we've got McCartney 3.
Yeah. This is the thing, isn't it? It's been really strange interviewing musicians over lockdown, because I do a lot of this stuff for me job, and it's been weird seeing how different people have been reacting to it, because a lot of the musicians, be they big or small, they haven't had this enforced time of not being able to play in front of anyone, you know. So there's a real, like, I don't know, I think some of them almost have felt a sense of sort of self-doubt with, like, well, if a tree falls in a forest, ... You know, if I'm being this acclaimed sort of musician at home, but nobody can hear me or see me do my thing, then am I really, what worth have I got? And it's rubbish, but I can understand if you haven't got those people applauding or feeding back into you, that must be quite difficult. I mean, everyone's having a hard time. There are many people having a harder time, I'm sure, than Elton John and Pete Townsend right now, I'm sure. But, you know, on a personal level, it must be quite odd to, like, not have that adulation. So for Paul just to think, fuck it, I'm just going to get him a studio and do this, is, he still loves it, doesn't he? He still loves writing, clearly. Yeah. He loves it.
Yeah. There's a few critics moaning about Egypt Station when it came out. They're accusing him of trying too hard. And I think it was, you know,
what a weird thing to say. I mean, it's got a couple of clangers on it, but it's got some really good songs on it. Egypt Station, the final song is amazing. It's really good.
Yes,
it's great. Yeah. And, like, oh, he's trying too hard. Oh well, I wish he hadn't bothered at all. I wish he'd walked in, fucking knocked a guitar over with his knee and then gone to the pub. Oh, it's much more authentic when you don't try. Fuck off. Everybody gets good. Everyone gets good at stuff by trying. That's how you get good. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was really trying those lyrics rather. Oh, yeah, that'll do. Great. Oh, much better. He definitely wasn't trying on that song. It's true, though. It's easy to punch people, though, isn't it? It's easy to have a go.
But I think it was to you. I think it was to you, because he must have heard some of this criticism, and he was saying with this album he was deliberately trying not to, you know, not to put, just do it and see what happens. So, you know,
which,
and I think for us it's like the Holmes in the Hammer thing, Holmes under the Hammer thing. It's I want to know more about what Paul does at home, and without getting in stalker territory.
Yeah.
But, you know, just hear all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's like, what kind of slippers does he got? Does he wear slippers?
Yeah.
You know, this is all connected to the bigger record. I've got a big theory again. It's not even a big theory. I've got, like, what I think about the record, which we'll get to at the end. But this is all connected to it. It's the details. It's the little minutiae of life. That's as interesting, more interesting than the big stuff. And I think that's kind of part of what this album, if not is about, then definitely represents. So yeah, I'm all, if I knew what kind of pajamas Macca wore, I'd love that kind of fact. I know all about his bass guitar and I'm fascinated by it, but I'd love to know about his pajamas. What kind of biscuits does he have? You know? I can't remember. We did a thing in his studio a couple of years ago for Egypt Station. And we had biscuits and I can't remember what kind of biscuits they were. That upsets me. I should have remembered that. I told you you got 5G though, didn't I? Did I tell you that?
No.
So this is...
Spread the news.
This is years ago. No, it's Egypt Station. So we went to his studio. It's got a windmill above it. We really are rambling in this one, but fuck it. I don't care. And name dropping. And we were there waiting to do an interview and he popped out to say hello before and apologise for being late. It's fine. You can do what you want, Paul. And I was looking for a signal on my phone and it came up as the name of his studio, 5G. And I was like, no one's got 5G yet. Only Mac has got 5G. I can't believe I haven't told you this story before. So yeah, so he had 5G. He's probably on like 8G now. He's probably way surpassed. He's like streaming like 8-hour movies on his phone and shit like that. You know, but I don't resent him that. He deserves it. He deserves to have 5G first, you know.
So we move on to the album then.
Yeah.
I mean, again, we're talking about the promo. It was just insane. And there's lots and lots of versions that you can get. There's 4 coloured vinyl, each one with a bonus track on. So you've got Woman and Wives studio outtake. You buy a different version, you get Lavatory Lil outtake. Buy another one, you get the Kiss of Venus phone demo.
Oh.
Which is interesting.
Nice.
And another one, you get Sliding... brackets Dusseldorf jam. So I don't know that's
can you make
what he was eating at the time.
Can you make jam from a city? How do you do that? is it Dusseldorfians that have been reduced to their sugary
sugary base?
Another good name for an album.
So let's move on to the album. We start off with track 1, Long-Tailed Winterbird. First of all, it reminds me very much of the way Syd Barrett opened his album Barrett with Baby Lemonade, with that sort of long guitar. Very similar for me. But also, what I love about this, you can tell he's just sort of, oh, I'll try a bit of this. So there's a bit of Mellotron on there. And I think it's the Mellotron sound he had for Strawberry Fields.
It's that Mellotron and that tape.
Mellotron. Yeah, which is also, oddly enough, if you listen to the Kinks' Phenomenal Cat, the bit at the beginning, is the Mellotron that is used at the end of Strawberry Fields.
Same one.
Sounded the same. Yeah.
Cool.
Same setting.
Nice.
So, yeah, but Paul was saying he had an idea, start doing it. Normally I'd start with an instrument, either piano or guitar, then add some bits and layer it up. So it's kind of what he did with McCartney 1 and 2, but it's straight into McCartney 1.
Yeah, it is.
The overall sound.
I think this is what's lovely about this, and this happens a lot on this record, because this one feels especially like a bit of a sketch, although the bass sound is still amazing, clearly.
Yeah.
Paul's bass is just, it's that bass, isn't it? It's that bass. And drumming great and the sort of weird little noodles of electronic music. But the joy of this record and this song is you see what's happening in your mind, especially because there's not really much vocal on this, is it's impossible to listen to it without thinking and visualising Paul just in his studio on his own, pootling about. That's that's what you see when you hear it. You imagine him sitting there. Oh, that's quite. Yeah, I'll do. I'll move on to the next bit. And that's that picture is so vivid because as a performer, like, he's a man who understands why people like to look at Paul McCartney, both performing or just walking down the street, I guess. But also, he's quite unself-conscious, I think. I think when he's working, he's just doing whatever he wants. And I say this is another name-droppy moment. I interviewed Youth, the producer, about some stuff a few years ago and talked to him about Fireman, which was the group that he, or the group that him and Paul did. Was it two albums or three albums as Fireman? I can't remember. Three. Of which, Sing the Changes, by the way, it's like one of the great, not even Lost, but one of the great Macca songs. That was a Fireman track. Mm. And I was talking to Youth about, what's it like? You know, he's a very successful producer. And I could see why Paul chose him, because he's brilliant at noise and sound and experimentation.
Oh, yeah.
And Youth's comment was, he's the most fearless musician I've ever worked with. And I said, what do you mean? He says, well, like, he'll just start playing. He'll say, run the tape. And before he's worked out what he's going to do, Paul will just go for one. Just like, and that's, you know, normally you have an idea. Wow. So he'll just jump straight in. And if it's not right, doesn't matter, he'll do it again. And he said, that was really amazing. He'll just, right, just do it. Just see how things turn out. And that's what this song is about a little bit. That idea of I'm just gonna play and see what happens. Mm. And I can think about it or I can just do it. And sometimes the more you think about it, the better it gets. And other times, the worse it gets. And so there's an immediacy there. And I just love that idea of just Paul standing there with the bass guitar. Just count me in. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Anything's going to happen in the next 3.5 minutes. I don't know. I'll know when I'm doing it. I'll know when I'm playing. And so that I find really cool, that, isn't it? Just, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
I mean, the only lyrics in this are, do you miss me? So it's, do you miss me? Do you feel me? Do you trust me? And all three are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is, there's also a similar thing happened when other artists have released or announced music over the past 8 months. Happened with AC/DC. When AC/DC announced they were doing a record, people were just like, oh, great. I need this right now. I just need some shouty men playing the same song they've been playing for 50 years, but it's a fucking great song. I don't want the record to be any different, which is fortunate because it's not. I want them to be exactly the same. And it's like, you know, having that shouty drunken uncle come and visit. You're like, brilliant, Uncle Dan, you're a bit of an arsehole, but I haven't seen you for ages. I've been a bit miserable. I just, you what I need to come and, you know, have a slash in the flower pot outside because you can't be bothered to go and use the toilet and just be Larry and like, take the mickey. Sometimes you just need, at the moment, those things. And there's been a lot of...
Yes, yeah.
In the same way that listening figures on Spotify for the Beatles really went up during lockdown, because people seek solace, and they seek solace in the familiar and the loved and the reliable and the trusted, as you say. And so when it was like when Macca's doing a record, oh, brilliant. Oh, yeah, we need this. I'm not saying we don't need new artists or new music, because of course we do. But sometimes it's nice to have a visit by Uncle Paul. He's like, oh, brilliant, Paul's coming around. Doesn't come around very often. But it's always nice to have him, and it's going to make us all feel happier and better about ourselves and the world. And that's what, you know, that's what he's doing. It's nice to have him back, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And also I think it's the fact that it is, you know, we know the story of McCartney 1 and 2 when they were recorded during not the best of times. And it's 50 years' time. McCartney 3, the story, will be as important as McCartney 1.
Yeah, you're right. I'd always be happy to hear anything from him, but I'm more pleased he's done this than squirreled himself away and finished off the musical. I'm sure the musical would be brilliant, you know. But yeah, like this, is it a gift to the listeners? I don't know. I just think he wanted to do a record, and we're really happy to have it. Well, I can find
find my way. I know my left from right, because we never close. I'm open day and night.
So track two, and this was written right at the beginning of lockdown. It's Find My Way.
More name dropping. It starts off with an electric harpsichord. Now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, this is only one of two electric harpsichords in the country. A band I was in years ago, not the rubbish band, the other band that didn't sell any records, we did a recording session at Air Studios for our single Ill-Fated album. And on one of the tracks, we needed an electric harpsichord. So one was duly hired in. And we got Wicks, Paul's keyboard player, to come and play it, because they're really fucking difficult to play. They require a lot of hammering on the keys, harpsichords, and electric harpsichords, because they don't sustain notes. And one, it was lovely to have him in the studio, because he was the nicest guy. I very occasionally bump into him at things, and drunkenly, normally, I'm like, oh, you remember that session? He's like, no, but it's nice to see you. Strange, shouty man. And
You are his Uncle Dan.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. We haven't seen each other for ages. I don't remember you at all. But he did a lovely solo for us on this electric harpsichord. And it was Air Studios up in Hampstead in London. And George Martin visits the studio during our session.
Wow.
The one and only time I've met him. And the producer for the session, whose name I can't even remember, big shot American producer guy, was just floored by the fact that George Martin had come to visit. Not us. I think he was there to see Wicks and there to see what was happening in Studio One. And he came to sort of sit next to me on the mixing desk area. There was me, George, and a couple of other guys, and Wicks on the other side of him. And I start trying to sort of ask him questions, and he's just ignoring me. And I'm like, oh, God, have I overstepped the mark? Maybe I shouldn't be asking him. And then Wicks would ask him something, or one of the other guys in the band would chime in, and he'd go, oh, yes, blah, 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 and he'd chat away to them. I was thinking, oh, what have I done? I've never spoken. Or maybe I've really offended him. This is awful. And after a couple of questions just being ignored, it was like, I'm just going to shut up now, because this is terrible. Oh. And it's because his hearing had gone, of course, in one ear, and he couldn't hear me at all. And because there was music being pumped through, he just couldn't hear me. So I got ignored by Sir George Martin. But anyway, he pointed at the harpsichord and went, oh, yes, this is electric harpsichord.
That's Prince Charles like there it. As well, then.
That's Brian Ferry. That's lovely. He pointed and went, yeah, electric harpsichord. Paul's got the only other one, hasn't he? And we were like, I don't know. You'd know. So I'm hoping it was that harpsichord. Oh, yeah, it's a bit of a long-winded story. The denouement of being I got ignored by Sir George Martin. But that's better. And he signed, I did get him to sign a CD of Abbey Road, because I had it in my bag. CD's not the same, is it? Like a little, it's in biro, it's not the same as the record, but I've got it.
Yeah, but I got a paperback book signed by George rather than the hardback.
It's, you know, it's a little bit budget, isn't it? I love your work. This is Abbey Road. I taped it at home onto a TDK. I've written the track list, and could you sign that for me? I'm a big fan. Can you do it in pencil so I can rub it out if I want to use the cassette again?
So, back to Find My Way.
Go on.
So, I mean, let's talk about his vocals.
Mm.
Because I think a lot of people were moaning about Egypt Station and a lot of his live gigs. But I think we've now got Paul with his new voice. And I think he does an amazing job on this.
Yeah. I think, like, your voice changes. That's what happens when you live. your ears get bigger, your nose gets bigger, you get hairy up shoulders or whatever that happens to you, and your voice changes. Elton John's voice is completely different to how it used to be. Everyone's voice changes, especially if you use it as an instrument all the time. And so it's not the same as it was, but it's still brilliant, you know. And I think There's a few songs on this album where his voice is less adorned or perfect than it's ever sounded, and I think it's better for it. It's not like it's not Johnny Cash Solitary Man. It's not like a broken. Not that, actually, that was a great record, but just the kind of you can feel the years in Johnny Cash's voice on those American recording records. It's not like that, but it just feels really honest. I love just hearing him sing, you know, because it's on this record because it is so honest. It is honest. He hasn't auto-tuned it. It doesn't even sound like there's that many drop-ins or bits done again. I think the singing's really strong because it's so honest. And yeah, it's the duality of this song, isn't it, really? It's the kind of positivity of the verses and then the fear and the anxiety of the choruses. That's the thing, isn't it, I think?
Yeah.
It always
comes through positive, though. It's Paul, and he's saying, I know my way around. I walk towards the light. I'm open round the clock. I don't get lost at night. And you think, nah, Paul, you probably don't.
Yeah, there's the lyric, I can't help, I can help you reach the love you feel inside. You know?
Yeah.
Here's this, this positivity. You say the falsetto shakes a little tiny bit, but I think it's lovely. Like the twin guitar parts aren't perfect. I think if he'd thought about making the twin lead bits totally sync up and be perfectly the same, you would have lost that kind of simplicity. You know that there's a kind of brass horn trumpet sample thing on it that he plays rather than obviously, and it just sounds that he hasn't thought too much. He's just done it. And when he just doesn't think very much, he's better than most people thinking very, very hard. So yeah, it's upbeat. It's, you know, there's a simplicity about it that I find enormously, enormously appealing. And it's got a false ending on it as well, which I always like a song that ends and then like, oh fuck it, I'll just keep carrying on for a little bit because I feel like it, you know.
Well, he was always a big fan of Pet Sounds. Ooh.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Where it ends, and then there's this.
Yeah, it's not. I think that's the indication, isn't it? We just kept on playing for a bit because we wanted to keep on playing for a bit, and isn't that the best reason for doing anything? Because we just wanted to. So our consideration was doing something that we enjoyed. That's the consideration. So that's what you can hear. So that's the best reason for making anything is to do it because you want to do it. You know.
Yeah. He's got a lovely guitar style, and he does it throughout this, but it's almost like Dick Dale.
Yeah, he's quite twangy on this, isn't he? He's quite twangy. I was going to say he's a bit of an underrated guitarist, but he's not, is he? Everyone knows he's brilliant as well. He's like, it's not just all the other instruments. Good tambourine as well. You know, I've got a tambourine thing. You know, I've got my little tambourine kink, is that all great bands have a distinctive tambourine sound. And there is, it's very high in the mix, the tambourine. It's got that, you know my name, look up my number, that really crunchy, heavy tambourine. There's a bit of that in it, which I like. He's not scared of the percussive jangle. Ah, Paul. Good work.
Look into my lens. Give me all you got. Work it for me, baby. Let me take my best shot. Meet the pretty boys. A line of bicycles for hire. Objects of desire. Working for the squire. You can look, but you better not touch.
So next we move on to the Victor Meldrew Grumping of Pretty Boys.
Why do you say Victor Meldrew?
Well, he sounds a bit narky here, I think, lyrically.
Go on.
Well, he's effectively bemoaning male models or boy bands, it could be.
You think that?
I think so. What do you think?
Well, this is... I mean, after obviously, the minute he sings sort of Pretty Boys having their pictures taken, you just think, it's the Beatles. He's thinking about the Beatles. But I like this because after a song so direct as its predecessor. This is a lot more opaque, I think.
Yeah.
Which is a nice Macca trick. It's a kind of tool he's got in his arsenal. You can sort of, when he's oblique, it almost double takes you. Like, oh, I don't quite know what he's singing about here. This is, okay, I've got to think about this a bit more, which is always something he's been able to, because it's quite a simple sort of acoustic tune and a very simple melody. They sound simple. All his melodies sound really simple, but of course they're not. It's very difficult to write melodies that sound that simple. But then there's this idea lyrically of these people, these boys being photographed. They're kind of, they're desirable, but they're powerless. There's the line, "There go the pretty boys, a row of cottages for rent," which is, you know, suggestive. "Here come the pretty boys, a line of bicycles for hire, objects of desire when they're working for the squire." And I think that's quite, it's, I think it's a little bit, is it a bit malevolent? There's certainly this idea, I thought it was maybe more about social media and this idea of things that you're, you know, Instagram, the ideas of what you're supposed to find attractive, this idea of image, because Mac has been photographed more than anyone, you know, more than nearly anyone. Linda was a photographer, so he's certainly not, he's not denigrating, and Mary's a brilliant photographer, he's not denigrating the kind of the power of photography or the importance of it. And I don't think he'd be looking it down his nose at a boy band, would he? I think he's, I wouldn't say,
I don't know. It is opaque. I'm just reading through now, and you're right. It could actually be quite. Yeah, good luck to them.
Yeah, there's definitely.
It's how you take it.
Yeah, there's lovely depth to it, and you know, it made me go and read again. You know, the photographer Chris Floyd.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And the amazing photograph that he took of Paul McCartney. Do you know? Did you read the whole little
black and white one?
Did you read the little story about it?
Yes, I did. Yeah,
which is just like this this lovely little story. Which if you don't know Chris's stuff, look for him online because he's brilliant. And this incredible black and white portrait he did of Macca, looking livid. And he'd been to New York to go and interview, take his photograph. And for various reasons, it didn't happen for ages and days. He was waiting around, and eventually got some time with Paul. And Paul was kind of just doing the poses that, you know, he was just having fun in the studio, enjoying himself. And Chris was like, that's not what I want. I, you know, like, try and push him to get something a bit different. And in Chris's piece that he writes about on his website, you know, Macca says, "What's the matter? You don't like a bit of whimsy?" Referring to his kind of japing about. And the Gulf War had just started at the time. And Chris says, "No, not when there's a war on, Paul." And Paul's face just drops. And I found it to read it again. And he says, "The public McCartney we've known for all our lives is gone. The eyes narrow. And the thing I remember most, his jawline tightens and clenches. For a few seconds, his face has gone from soft marshmallow cherub to steel reinforced granite. Right there for two frames locked in silver nitrate. He hates me and I love him for it." And so and the picture is amazing.
It's astonishing.
It's just a piece.
Yeah.
I mean, he's as I say, he's good. And I couldn't help thinking about that in this. I think I don't know. I think there's. It's he was in a band that was seen as just being pretty boys for a long time before they realised their potential, or people realised what they had the potential to be. So I don't think he'd look down his nose at a boy band. I think he'd feel empathy for them. That's my take on it. Anyway, you know.
Well, I've changed my mind in the last 5 minutes.
It's empathetic. Empathetic. "A line of bicycles for hire, objects of desire when they're working for the squire." That's a good lyric, man.
"Hear me, women and wives, hear me, husband and lovers. What we do with our lives seems to matter to others. Some of them may follow roads that we run down, chasing tomorrow."
So move on to track 4. This was inspired by the deep south blues of Leadbelly. It's Women and Wives.
You see, I'm not as keen on this one. This was the first one I came up against, but I'm going to contradict myself completely because I was listening to the record earlier today and listened to this a couple of times. And I was like, I'm not really feeling it. Maybe this one isn't for me. And then I drove off to take my daughter to see Father Christmas, socially isolated Father Christmas, at a shopping centre near me. And on the way there, I was da da dum da da dee, do 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 do, da da da, and I was like, oh, that's the song I was just listening to. Oh, bugger, it's in there. I was humming the tune totally unconsciously. I wasn't aware of thinking about it. Of all the stuff I listened to this morning, it just foomp, just that.
Yeah.
Dee, 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 dee. And then I started to think, if I heard that, maybe just that bit, maybe not the chorus, maybe just that bit, as a little interlude, a little mini song on the White Album or on Paul McCartney One, I'd love it, wouldn't I? Just that little bit. And I was like, yeah, I would.
Yeah.
He's got the melodic power to this day, to even when you're thinking, oh, I'm not so bothered about that one. You are. It's got in there. It's got in there. It's also got Bill Black from Elvis Presley's band bass on it.
Yeah.
Which is time for another Matt Everett Remembers. Matt Everett name drops. So when we went to his studio to go and interview him, we went into his office, which was really beautifully, tastefully done. You know, not obvious. It's weird. You go around some rock stars' houses and it's either very obvious they've got nothing of theirs in it, right? No gold disc. It's almost like it's like a statement that they haven't got anything there about their band. And you go to others and it's fucking everywhere. Like, you can't move for God. Both of those are fine. I think there's a line to walk between the two. I think there's you want a bit of your own tat about the house if you're famous, but not so much that it looks like, you know, you love yourself. Maybe it's okay, like, around the bathroom or whatever. Anyway, so he's got bits and pieces, nice stuff. There was a really beautiful, I think I said this before, like a George Harrison record player that was really sweet, which I noticed. And in the corner of the room, a grey, silver grey double bass with white banding around the outside of it. And I was like, that's odd. I haven't seen it. Obviously, he's had it made for himself, you know, because you can. He fancies a big grey double bass. Propped up in the corner. And he's pootling about the office while I'm setting up the microphones. And my friend from his label, Bruno's there. And I'm like, oh, I think it was Bruno that said, wow, that's a nice bass. That's not the one you got at the auction. That's not Bill Black's bass. And Mac is like, yeah, that's right. And I was like, what?
Wow.
And then Mac says, oh, yeah, you know, I like found it at auction because Elvis, obviously big influence. Yeah, we know. God, we know. Yeah, yeah. You know, please tell us more. And then start saying a little bit about how Heartbreak Hotel changed his life and how he bought this bass guitar at an auction. And then he starts playing it.
Really?
He starts going,
wow.
Since my baby left me, doodum, found a new place, doodum.
Wow.
And me and Bruno collectively fucking lose our minds because we're like, holy shit, he's fucking playing. He's playing. That's the bass that was next. That's the bass on the records that changed the world and made him who he is. And it was one of those moments when your brain can't compute because it's all going a bit weird. Your head's like, this isn't happening. Remember this, like, my eyes should be cameras. The tape wasn't rolling, so we didn't record it or anything because, you know, it was just a casual thing. And then he says, you know, like I like to think one day when I'm gone, they'll just be like in a little display case like that, you know, I'm a little Hofner from Hamburg, just next to each other. I think that'd be quite a nice thing.
Wow.
Just say what? Which was just brilliant. I mean, So hearing that double bass on this track, is great because it's him once again. He's playing an instrument that means so much to him that, like,
yeah,
you know. And the reason I didn't recognise it at all, because I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to these things, is because if you ever saw it on telly, it's in black and white. So I just thought it'd be brown, like wood colour.
Of course.
Because that's what colour double basses normally are. But obviously to look a bit zhuzh on telly or in black and white or on stage, he had it painted silver. So I nicked it. Yeah. So that's it's not my song on the record, but there's a lot of reasons to love it. Let's put it like that.
Yeah, it's a nice positive. I mean, he was saying, you know, let's think what we're handing down to, you know, the next generation as a parent and grandparent. You think about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's what he's been thinking about during lockdown.
It's family again, isn't it? You know, this is it's the, of all the things to write about, writing about one's kind of family could be seen as being mundane if you're, you know, all interested in the flash and the, if you're in Muse, it's very unlikely you're going to write about your mum, isn't it? Nothing. I like Muse a lot.
I'm trying to picture that.
Yeah, exactly. But there's a real power to intimacy, isn't there? And that's something that he cares passionately about, something that he knows a lot about. I think that's, you know, and yeah, everyone's been stuck in with their family. So songs, it could have been like, load the dishwasher properly next time, mum, or whatever. Like, you know, whatever the
you missed a bit.
Yeah, you missed a bit. The domestic equivalent of this is. But yeah, it's lovely. It's a lovely sentiment.
I mean, he's been telling lovely stories as well. You know, he's been Mary, her partner, and his grandkids. Mm. And he was saying about, you know, he'd pop off to the studio. It's about 20 minutes away. Then he'd come back and, oh, she's a great cook. And so he's been doing all right, you know?
Yeah.
He's kind of enjoyed it by the sounds of it.
I think that's it. Yeah, I think he's...
Time to reflect.
You can tell in some of the interviews that he's at pains to kind of say, look, you know, it's been all right for me, but, you know, it's been shit for other people. I am totally aware of that. He's not unaware of his fortunate nature. But, yeah, I mean, you know, there's probably worse places to be locked down in than Macca's house with his lovely family, you know?
Track 5, Lavatory Lil.
Mm.
And Paul was saying that this was about someone we rubbed up against. You get a few of them in life. These people who screw you over, and I thought, I'll have you. I'll write a song. You'll never know it's about you because I won't tell anyone, but I'll know. And people who know I'm talking about will know. So,
oh, wow.
Don't know who it's about, but it's yeah.
How long before?
Quite biting.
How long before somebody works it out? Because it's impossible, you know. Like he can't even cough without someone finding out who initially had the germs that he got. You know, someone's done a book on it for Christmas, I would imagine. I mean, part of me thinks, what a great compliment to be captured in song. Obviously, as will be written about extensively, you know, the lovely Rita Polythene Pam. History of character pieces that his career is littered in. It's the fact it sounds like it's got a real groove to it. It sounds like a band, this one. And which is great, considering it isn't a band, it's just him. And there is that ability that great musicians, multi-instrumentalists have of being really empathetic to themselves when playing in a band with themselves. For instance, there's an amazing, you know, the Classic Albums series? Documentary series. There's a really good one with Stevie Wonder, and he's talking about in the documentary he recreates some of the songs, so he kind of like does the bits himself and they layer it up again like he did on the original version, and he does Superstition and he starts up with the drums. I didn't know that Stevie Wonder was an amazing drummer. He is. Doesn't surprise me. And he starts off with just the drum take, and it's like, it sounds really weird. It sounds a bit out of time and a bit clumsy and a bit shit. And you're like, oh, okay, this isn't a very good start, Stephen. It's all gone a bit crap. And then as he starts to layer up the other instruments, everything, and he puts the keyboard on, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, my God, he knew exactly what he was doing. Like, right at the very... And it came together, and by the end of it, it's the most funky, brilliant, beautiful thing in the world. And so to be able to record, because there's just bass, drums and guitar on this, to be able to record separately, but it to feel like a band is no small achievement. And obviously, Paul's a brilliant drummer, and his greatest drumming influence was Ringo, because you couldn't avoid him for a while. And so when Paul drums, sometimes it sounds quite a lot like Ringo, which obviously makes me very, very happy, because it feels a bit like jamming with Richie. But yeah, there is, I mean, I say I'm not as enamoured of the song, but there's the, you think she's being friendly, but she's looking for a Bentley. That's a fucking great lyric, isn't it? That is so good. That is so great. Yeah.
There's also, she's acting like a starlet, but she's looking like a harlot. She's quite biting. But it reminds me of Queens of the Stone Age. Also, I do love, because he's, obviously his voice has changed now, and he's doing these backing vocals. So it's, look out for Lavatory Lil, and then,
look out for Lavatory Lil.
It reminds me of on old Siam Sir when he's like, Wolf and Stone. He's doing that voice.
Yeah, it's you, that was the thing. What other song was I listening to that's got the sort of boisterous backing vocals with no specific tune? It was a 70s thing, wasn't it? You get a lot of it on Christmas records. We'll get all the band. Carry That Weight's got a bit of that in as well. We'll just put like the band and the engineer, some mates, you know, people from the reception of the studio. We just want you all to bellow the chorus and we'll have that. Yeah. Like, do we need...
I think it's, is it Rockestra where it stops at?
I know I have to investigate. It's a gap in my knowledge, is the Rockestra thing. It looks like quite a nuts story.
Yeah, there was, depending on whose version you believe, it was quite a sniffy session. But no, I love this. I think it powers along. And again, it's as you say, because he would have had to start off with the drums.
Yeah.
So he's literally just been boom, 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 boom. And he would have had to kept it in his head, right, when this bass section comes in. And it's basically, you know, how do you do it? It's basically hitting drums for 3 or 4 minutes to himself,
and
trying to remember the song,
and knowing as well as the structure, knowing to kind of to keep the momentum and the groove of the song happening when there's nothing else happening. It's like, it's what they say about writing a novel, isn't it? They say like the hardest thing is consistency. Everyone writes the first chapter and it's full of florid verse and passion, and then when you get to chapter 9, it's like, oh, and then she went to the shops. Because it's very difficult to maintain maintain style. So this is a similar thing, to kind of keep that hammering along, you know. That's no small skill, Paul.
You know that deep, deep feeling when you love someone so much, you feel your heart's gonna burst. The feeling goes from best to worst. You feel your heart is gonna burst. Here in my heart, I feel a deep devotion. It almost hurts. It's such a deep emotion.
So we move on to track 7, Deep, Deep Feeling. And this is a song Paul originally started in 2019, but was left unfinished. So I have to say, for me, which I would say about a lot of this album, first few times I listened to this, I thought, not sure about this. And then, but I've been listening to it in a very sort of analytical way, studying it and concentrating. And then I put it on a couple of days ago, just in the background, and it's possibly one of my favourites. It's such a grower.
Really? It's but, it's up the ante yeah, to the top ones already.
What about you?
It's yeah, it's the whole album gets better the more you listen to it, which I think is a sign of a good record anyway. It's over 8 minutes long. Yes. It sounds a lot like Beck. It's got, you know, there's the Morning Phase era Beck, which is another way of saying Beck sounds like Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney's now sounding a bit like Beck. Yeah, it's this sort of, there's very long instrumental passages in it where he's just kind of stretching out. And a lot of the instrumentation that I like is there's often with bands, because it's individual people playing their own instruments, everyone kind of wants their instrument to be kind of heard. Mm. You know, that's what guitar solos are about, aren't they, basically? It's just like, yeah, look at me. I'm a guitarist. Whereas this, it's like nothing is competing, because he's played it all himself, nothing is competing with itself, which is quite rare in songs. There's no one, you know, bass player's great, but the drummer's a bit shit. You know, like some bands have strengths and weaknesses within them, and that's what makes them great. But there's none of that with this. It's just all, it's sort of democratic. It's a very ego-free way of recording. It's not about listen to me. It's listen to the sound all these things are creating together, which is something I guess you get. And Beck does a similar thing, doesn't he? Because he plays so many instruments.
Yeah.
So I really like that ego-free sound of it. There's no one thing that's making itself known other than the voice on top, you know?
Mm. It's quite an eerie sound as well. You've got little bursts of mellotron on there as well.
And it's that, lyrically, it's that duality again, isn't it? You know, it's life is amazing. Life is wonderful. There's joy to be had. There's beauty out there. There's love. If you put yourself out there to experience all that to its fullest, it's going to hurt as well sometimes. You know, it's going to be difficult. That's, you know, what's it? A friend of mine always talks about, like, you always pay your taxes. Whatever happens and whatever you do, there's always kind of a cost somehow. But that's just, you know, so if you put yourself out to love someone unconditionally, then that's going to result in pain in some ways. But you have to do that because that's life. Life is about love and experience. Very, very Macca, isn't it? Very Macca.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of, when you talk about duality, I really struggle with the lyrics on this because, I mean, he was saying, basically, it was very Paul, you know, it's just about, you know, when you love someone so much that you get this pain. But there's so much more than that. I mean, he's singing, sometimes I wish it would stay, singing about emotion. Sometimes I wish it would go away. You know, that deep, deep feeling, the deep, deep pain.
Yeah.
So by using the word pain, is he thinking about his own mortality, about his love for Nancy and the pain of the future?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult at the moment to not read into anything he does that this is about him looking at his life and his mortality. But I think that's, he doesn't wake up in the morning and think, I've only got a few albums left. Every song will be, I don't think it's really like that. It's not like Black Star by Bowie when it's like, yep, he's going to die and he's going to write about it without anyone knowing. And then you kind of interpret it like that. I think it's more about, he loves, Paul is a person who loves. He loves his family, he loves his friends, he loves his job. He's a man who, that's so integral to who he is, putting himself out there emotionally. But that's you know, Linda goes, you know, all these people from his life go. But he wouldn't have experienced life to the depth that he has had he not loved them so much. And that's what, it's so painful when they disappear. But, you know, it's the duality. They kind of come together. Mm. Yeah, the deep pain. And it kind of, as I say, there's that sort of shift about two-thirds of the way through where it kind of goes all spacious and a bit fireman-y. It's lovely. It's a really lovely song. You know, I'm with you. The first time I heard it, I was like, the lyrics gave me problems. But I think it's another insight, isn't it? It's another insight into how he feels about the world, Paul. Oh, it's all right, mate. But it's optimistic again, though, isn't it? You know?
It is optimistic. Well, it ends really optimistic. It's got that little coda at the end. And it just typically ends on a major. It's been minor chords for 8 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And it just ends on the major. Mm. And it's like, yeah, that's Paul. No, I was just thinking about, I'm sort of reading all this into it, but Paul's quote was, what became nice about working in the studio was that in the evening, Mary would be cooking. She loves to cook. And we'd be sitting around before dinner and she'd say, well, what did you do today then? And I'd say, oh, okay, I'll play it for you. So it's that. It's for Paul, it's just knocking it out.
Yeah, there's so much that's fascinating about him, but I do, obviously, the domesticity of the setup really appeals to me, and that kind of that's part of the whole record. But I mean, I've only ever met Mary McCartney once, and she was unsurprisingly like brilliant, really funny,
yeah,
really warm, really welcoming, really friendly, really piss-takey, which I really liked as well. Mm. I met her at a thing that Giles Martin was at, and the pair of them just started ripping each other to shreds in a really like you do with your brothers and sisters. And you think, yeah, of course, yeah, because you've known each other since you were like tiny. But I just kind of wonder if your dad's Paul McCartney, nothing your parents do is ever cool for a long time. You know what I mean? There is nothing your parents can do when you're, especially when you're a teen and you're like, oh God, you're rubbish. And then you get a bit older and you're like, oh God, you're just a bit boring. You're not rubbish, you're boring. And then you move to that point, you start to really appreciate your folks, if you're lucky enough to still have them around. And then you get the understanding. Then if you have kids, you're like, oh God, right. You did all that stuff. Yeah, we had you guys. And now, yeah, and it's this. So I just kind of wonder, I mean, of course she can separate famous Paul from being her dad because it's just her dad. But I'm really interested in when he puts on his record of Christmas songs that he recorded just for the family, whether they roll their eyes and like, oh, come on, Dad. Whereas everyone else in the world would be like, oh my God, Paul's Christmas album, you know?
Yeah.
Whether they
it's been so ingrained in them because you've got all these tapes of the backyard tapes with he and Linda and they were literally toddlers then. And there's also a lovely thing, well worth hunting out, Paul basically making up nursery rhymes for them in the early 70s. And it goes on a while, but they're so into it. And they would have, basically from the day they were born, all they would have known is music. So I don't know. So there's an interview with Mary, or Mary's interviewing Paul.
Yeah.
I think it was for the Wingspan. And it's like no interview you've ever seen. And there is that glint in their eye. And they are kind of taking the piss out of each other.
I love it. Yeah, because, yeah.
So just, I think, yeah, I reckon they love it.
Yeah, she was very, very lovely. She was lovely. But yeah, so yeah, anything like that. It's an insight into his world, as everything is. But, you know, give me more of it. Give me more of it. Give me more of it.
Sliding, which we were talking about youth earlier. This really reminds me of Electric Arguments, Nothing Too Much, Just Out of Sight. Mm. That kind of vibe. Screamy Paul.
Screamy Paul. You know, it's always good to get some shouty Paul, isn't it? You know, it's always good. Yeah. It's always good to get a bit of... It's always nice when he does Helter Skelter live, isn't it? Because you're like, yeah, shouty Paul. This reminds me a lot of the track he did with the Foo Fighters. That was a good tune. Really raucous, really noisy. This reminds me of that. I think it's about the old jazz woodbines. I think, well, look, there's here we go. I'm sliding, gliding through the air. I can see my body through windows in my hair. That's a great line. I'm sliding, gliding through the air. I mean, someone's rolling their own there, aren't they? You know? Don't you think? It's the most cosmic one. I can see my body through windows in my hair. It's the most cosmic track on the record. Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe?
I guess.
You know?
I can feel my body burn, gliding through the air. I don't know, because, I mean, on Egypt Station, he was singing about how he used to. You know, I used to smoke. So, I'm... Paul, you lied to us. You told us on Egypt Station. But I can't believe he's still doing it now.
Oh, you don't think so? I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously he's pretty healthy. He's always been pretty healthy, but like, you know, he's sort of looking after himself. But are you telling me, right, okay. So are you telling me that at some point during the it's, I know, maybe it's 11:30 in the studio. He's normally knocked off by like 9 to go and have dinner with Mary and the kids. But he's working a bit later because this track's sounding pretty good. He's quite enjoying himself. Little glass of red wine, not a big small one on the side, on the top of the amp. And he's like, oh, you know, there is that. That little bag behind the back of the AC30 amp over there. Might just, no one else is ready. He hasn't got smoke detectors in his studio because, you know, it's his studio. Might just have a little, just, I'm not saying like.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I think, bear in mind, he's 78.
Yeah.
So I think it's more likely to be a malt whiskey. Maybe he's getting the same hit from malt whiskey.
I think it's a bifter. And I say that with no judgment at all. I say that as no criticism. If anyone has earned the right to have a relaxing doobage, then I think it's Paul. And he was certainly very fond in the past, wasn't he?
So they say. So sliding, yeah, I think it's a powerful,
yeah,
really powerful song, I think.
It's a good tune. It's a good tune. There is that, yeah, you know, I like his groove. I mean, this is the thing. I think it sounds to me a bit like Arctic Monkeys, something off AM. If this was released with Alex Turner singing it, I think, you know, it'd be all over the place.
Yeah.
It'd be huge.
The kiss of Venus has got me on the go. She's got a bullseye in the air.
So we move on to track 8, and this is The Kiss of Venus. So this is Noodly Paul.
Noodly Paul. This is the one where the voice is kind of at its most exposed, isn't it? This is the, like,
yes, yeah,
you know, the most sort of honest vocal take, which is lovely because it shows he's not scared of just singing the way he sings now. And I think his voice sounds lovely because it is... It's really unadorned on this. It's really, you can hear his age in his voice, and you can, but he's still got that beautiful phrasing. You know, it's still a lovely. That's what I like about it. I wasn't as enamoured of, I mean, the kind of lyrical inspiration. But what was kind of nuts is when I was reading about this, is how much the album, as we're speaking, has just come out. As we're speaking, it hasn't come out yet, but it has just come out when this goes out, is how much information is out about all the songs already online. It's like there's people doing little weird cover versions and analysing everything, and it's not even there yet. It must be a really weird universe. I mean, you can't... It's like everything... the appetite for something is so vast that there's all this information about it everywhere, even though no one's actually heard the song yet. It's very strange.
Yeah. But they have been, they've been slapping up the sheet music, haven't they, all over the cities around the world. So
what I like about this is about 50 seconds into the song, there's this beautiful little plucking acoustic run that he does.
Yeah.
It's just exquisite. It's over in a couple of seconds.
Yes.
It's
yes.
so short. And then it's gone and you're like, wow, that was...
Yeah.
And there's another one about 1:22, and it's not even a solo. He just, and the pair of them are the most beautiful pieces.
I know.
It's interesting that you pick them out as well. You're like, God, that's gorgeous. And
they burst out. Yeah.
And you're like, God, you're brilliant. Like the little sort of casual bits are just gorgeous. And I love. As much as I love the kind of band stuff that he does, I was listening to Despite Repeated Warnings, which is the last song on Egypt Station, I think, which is brilliant. It's like a proper, band on the run, multi-part blazer. But, you know, if it's Vanilla Sky or Calico Skies, the stuff when it's just him playing more or less on his own, that's the stuff that these days really, you know, gets me in the heartstring. And just the fact he's still got the facility to just drop in beautiful melodic phrases like that, and that's it. Yeah. Those two bits are worth the price of admission alone.
They are. They're adorable.
They're just doing their job in the song. That's the bit. Other people would be like, "That's great. We'll use either of those bits. That's the motif. We'll loop that repeatedly, or we'll build a whole song around those bits." And sometimes But, you know, that's the lovely thing about so much of his music. You know, I love little tiny nuanced bits, little vocal, like a chuckle here or a little tiny bass run here. And the Beatles stuff's full of it, isn't it? And obviously there's loads of stuff. We just like, whether they're improvised or I don't know, or whether they're just... we talked about this before, didn't we? The Beatles and Paul was right. It's got great taste. Sometimes you just need just a little bit of that. That's all you need. And then it becomes something that people like you and me are talking about and going, that's the best two bits of the song and they're barely 2 seconds long. But I love them and I'll look forward to them when they happen.
He was saying this was inspired by a book he was reading and about the maths of the universe.
Well, yeah, I mean, still, also, you know, once cosmic, always cosmic. You know, this is you know, as much as homespun charm is a huge thing for him. You know, there's a little bit of his brain that's always been, even like, you know, the first time he moved to London and kind of sought out a very familial world with Jane Asher, living with her family and having, you know, being part of that unit, that family, which echoed in some ways the family he grew up with. He was still thinking about the cosmic shit as well, and, you know, crazy galleries and avant-garde composers. Both things are important to him. So isn't it funny how much you can go on about just the smallest detail of a song like that? But I know.
One thing we haven't mentioned yet is the burst of harpsichord that comes through.
Always up for harpsichord, as you know. Fan of a bit of harpsichord. He's just... It's really interesting, isn't it? The instinctiveness of his playing, you can just feel that it's, as we talked about before, it's just kind of come out of him, hasn't it? Bless him. And once again, you're just sitting there, imagining him in the studio, headphones on, he's just listening to the track, waiting to come in on the right moment, and bobbing about, and then sort of thinking to himself, yeah, that'll do, that's it, that's the one. No one else around him, no other engineers, that's the image that you get. It's beautiful.
To be bad, I prefer to think twice. All I know is it's quite a show, but it's still alright to be nice. Yankee toes and Eskimos can turn to frozen ice when the cold.
And then we come to track 9, Seize the Day.
Yeah, much has been made of the I don't care to be bad, I prefer to think twice, all I know, it's quite a show, but it's still all right to be nice. That's the nice word. People are going to pick up on that, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, also, you've got Yankee toes and Eskimos and dinosaurs and Santa Claus.
Yeah, well, I think this is quite a Christmassy song, this. Generally, it might just be that it's now that, you know, it's mid-December. But there's quite a Christmassy vibe to this.
Yes, yeah.
You know, which I mean, I bet Jeff Lynne is listening to this going, oh, it's got, it's the thing that he does that Jeff Lynne then made a career out of doing very well in nearly all his cases. Yeah. People sometimes, because it's him, I think, and we do it as well, don't we? You're sort of looking for some giant, colossal, hidden meaning. In everything, and sometimes there doesn't have to be. It's just like, let's be decent to each other. Let's just try not to be dicks, which is a pretty good life lesson anyway. Just try and not be an arsehole. You know, that's sometimes that is as big as the message has
but
to be.
But he couldn't think of a word to rhyme with arsehole.
Yeah, exactly. Elephant and castle.
Yep.
Living in an elephant castle. Down, stick it up your arsehole. Brown packages, something parcels. Yeah, if I can do it, Mac can do it. Maybe that's it. But yeah, I like it. I mean, it does. I mean, it's another one that I think, had it been done in non-lockdown, it would have been a much bigger song. You know, I think there would have been more on it. But I think it would have been less effective because of it. There's that Christmassy vibe to it. I think, I think there's no deep hidden inner meaning. I think it's just... You know, be a decent person. Don't be a dick. It's a lot easier in the long run to be nice to people. It's better to be nice to people. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, being an arsehole doesn't equate with authenticity, as we've talked about before, does it?
It's such a positive song. And I think, again, I wonder in years to come, whether people will look back and think of this as the COVID album, or it'll just be the third in the trilogy of the Macca albums, because this is such an uplifting song to come out of all of this.
Yeah, it is. I hadn't really thought about it like that. Yeah, I think this, I mean, every album has to have a story, doesn't it? Every record, even if you put the story on it afterwards. Rumours by Fleetwood Mac is about getting divorced and cocaine.
Yeah.
Like they're all about, have to be about something. There's got to be a story. And the story of this record is the COVID album, you know? Other people aren't really doing those COVID concept albums. Not that this is that, but, you know, people aren't doing, oh, this is the record I wrote in lockdown. Lots of art, no one's really done that apart from Paul, actually. If you think about it, you'd have thought that, you know, times of great political upheaval inspire music and times of great social trauma inspire people to write albums. And that hasn't really happened a lot with COVID, except for this record. He says, the more I think about it, the more it's true. He's kind of the first one to do it, isn't he?
Yeah.
Always still first. Always with the first, Paul. Still, to this day. To this day.
While he's, while he's tucking into Mary's dinner in the evening.
Oh, with a bagel and Marmite and a little bit of hummus. Gotta try that.
I know. I'm going to have this weekend.
Macca snacker. That's it.
One final thing on this. So I think this is like the 2020 version of Double Back Alley by the Ruttles.
I love that song. Love that song.
And also the chorus strangely reminds me of All the Young Dudes with the descending.
Yeah. I see that. Yeah. I mean, the more I listen to it, the more I love the record, you know. It's and his voice sounds good in this as well. There's almost kind of flashes of younger Paul in it.
Yeah.
It's a good tune. It's a good tune, man.
Track 10, Deep Down.
Smashing drumming. Absolutely smashing drumming again. I mean, this is a lovely sounding record, but it's the repetition, isn't it? It's back to the McCartney 2. There's that power in repetition. You just keep doing it and you get in a spot. You know, maybe you've indulged in a herbal roll up, maybe you haven't. Who knows? Depends what you believe about Paul's pastimes. Once again, his voice sounds really powerful on this. Once again, there's definitely that sort of younger Paul strident thing that he does. There's that, like, it's knowing when to just keep doing the same thing again and again repeatedly.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's, I've barely name checked for minutes. I've barely name dropped. I will do one now. I did an interview with Elvis Costello. And he was talking about sometimes you just shouldn't think too much about a recording. You shouldn't think too much about a song. And you should just do it. And he said, the phrase he used, like, sometimes you've got to get out of your own way. And I thought that was a really nice way of putting it. Like, sometimes you just got to know, is this the point in the song I should be going to another chord? Nah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep doing this. Oh, then normally it kind of goes somewhere. This is where it's going. It doesn't need anything. And he told this lovely story about his most recent record. Part of it was done with his jazz band, and The bass player was a guy whose name I've just forgotten. He used to play with Oscar Peterson. It was like one of the greatest jazz pianists of all time, late great Oscar Peterson. So his bass player, his double bass player, was just phenomenal. And the way they approached the recordings was very much like, look, well, we kind of know how the song goes, but that we're just going to play it and we're going to see what happens when we play it. That's going to be the take. The take isn't learning the song and then playing the song we've learnt. The recording is us just doing the song as it feels to us when we're performing. And he said this was made sort of glaringly obvious when just before the first take, this legendary bass player sort of crouches down so his mouth is near the microphone next to the strings and just says, "Now, nobody have any ideas, okay?" I just thought, that's just perfect.
Yeah.
Don't get in your own way. Just do it. Just because you expressing yourself without thinking about expressing yourself is the purest performance. Yeah. And I thought that about this. I just thought he just sits on it. There's no need to do anything else by this because it works really, really well. And to have the, not trying sometimes is, you know, it's good in this case.
Yeah. It's got a real swampy sort of chord sequence. It really reminds me a bit of Prince, and particularly, do you know the Ballad of Dorothy Parker and Sign of the Times?
Oh, yes, I do. Yeah. That's a good record.
He said a couple of songs on here where he was thinking, oh, maybe I should cut it down a bit. And I thought, well, I don't want to lose that bit. Yeah, go with it.
Yeah.
And that's what I love. They're long, but they're what he wants
rather
than what he expects us to like. What you were saying earlier about his voice, and there's some limitations, but he's really playing with his voice. He's doing that sort of, gonna get deep down.
And he's
doing falsetto and counter melodies, so he's still playing around with it.
He's enjoying himself. He's genuinely enjoying himself, which is just, obviously, that's just a lovely thing to hear. Any musician do it. But yeah, it's good. But it's time. It's time.
It's time.
Must fix the fence by the acre plot. Two young foxes have been nosing around. The lambs and the chickens won't feel safe until it's done. I must dig a drain by the carrot patch. The whole crop spoils if it gets too damp. And where will we be with an empty store when winter comes? When winter comes and food is scarce, we'll want our toes to stay indoors. When summer's gone, we'll fly away and find the sun when winter comes.
So we move on to the final track, Winterbird/When Winter Comes, which is an unused song from the 90s. During the recording sessions for Calico Skies on Flamey Pie. So as well as having Paul's younger voice, we also have the ghost of George Martin.
I mean, this is just, it's the most beautiful song. It is so, it kind of sums up the whole thing. There's it nods to the past, as you say. There's the groove from the very first track of the album comes back again for this song. And it's Paul musing on the jobs he needs to do around the farm. I mean, we're assuming it's Paul, you know, I assume he could be singing in character. Although there's one bit when he talks about, like, the food is going to become scarce in wintertime. And I'm thinking, that's probably not an issue that Paul has.
Yeah.
I'm sure Mary's got enough veggie sausages in the freezer. Yeah. But anyway, you're thinking about Paul in his wellies, stomping about his farm. Talking about fixing fences so foxes don't get at the chickens. And it's just this beautiful picture that he paints of time passing on a farm and the little world and the life of the people that live on it. And it's about that, but it's not. It's about the passing of time. Mm. And it's just, singing is obviously beautiful. The guitar playing is just fantastic. The arrangement is just gorgeous. It from the very first time I heard it, I was like, "This is just this is." It's there's always he doesn't do bad records, but there's always a couple on every album that really do remind you that he's a genius, and this is for me. It's that one. Did you feel the same way?
Yeah. He originally, I mean, he was talking about he was going to put it on a box set of Flaming Pie, but he read somewhere about another box set where they described some song. Oh, it's a great song, but it's hidden away on a, you know, some obscure box set. Well, I'd rather keep it as a track for itself. I think it's, I mean, it's very similar to Great Day.
Yeah.
At the end of Flaming Pie. So that's probably why perhaps it wasn't used. But I think in the context of now and this album and 2020, it's just it's so poignant. It's just that innocence of the before days, whatever you want to call them. You know, that's all his concerns are. Oh, must. And it's that use of must do this, must do that.
Yeah.
It's like a little writing a milk note. Or its innocence is really touching.
Yeah, there's that. It's because, as you say, he's sort of detailing this very domestic farm country life. And you believe it. That's the other thing. You do. I mean, he may well be writing in character, but, you know, you do think it's Paul walking past that fence thinking, gotta sort that out because the chickens are going to have a terrible time if I don't. And like that bit of drainage, I've got that pipe. it's gonna go all over the corner of that shed if I don't sort that out. And all the things. And it's made especially poignant because it missteps you unconsciously because you don't, you think Paul McCartney is always out being Paul McCartney and writing songs and thinking about, you know, gigs and orchestras and being brilliant and dealing with the very difficult, you know, being simultaneously ordinary man, but also being Paul McCartney. And but he's not. He's a guy who's just talking about sorting things out in his fields. And you believe it. It's about the warmth of home, warming your feet in the fire when it's cold, the passing of time, the idea that when things are really hard, they get better. You know, it's always darkest before the dawn, as a great similar Scouser once sung. You know, and we have each other. We've got each other to keep us company. It's about family, you know, we've got each other to give us a reason to mend things, a reason to do stuff, you know, to be someone to look after, to have someone to look after, have someone to look after you, to look forward to things together. There's the end of the lyric, I think you probably got it there, like where they sort of talk about almost flying away in summer. This idea of like there's a future. It's just beautiful. If I was writing it, it would probably be like, you know, sort out the tire pressure in the cars because it's going to go flat when you drive to see your mum. There's a leak coming out of the fridge. That's really shit and it smells a bit bad. You know, bathroom, bath mat needs replacing. It's got a weird stain on it. So, but when I talk about mundane lockdown things, gotta load the dishwasher a fucking again. Drive me up the fucking wall. Everyone's got, what are your lockdown? What are the things you're like, I cannot, I'm sick of doing this. What are your lockdown peeves?
To be honest, we were talking about it the other day, talking about Tier 3. And they're saying, such is our social life, it hasn't really had much of an impact. So.
Yeah. It's strange. It does feel, as we're speaking, there's a lot of people in three. There's a lot of people from two going into three. A lot of people worried about seeing their family, if they can see their family, it's Christmas. So maybe that is obviously having an effect on why it speaks to me so much. And this idea of, you know, time, the passing of time, how much time have we got? Not in a kind of like, oh, how many years have I got left? More in a kind of like, it's all really precious. It's really precious. Mm. I very much side with Paul on the intrinsically life is brilliant. Life is there. There is so much joy to be found, no matter how difficult it is and hard it is. You know, look for the joy and it'll make the hard stuff bearable. And now, more than ever, that's how you feel. You know, I just went out for a little walk with my wife earlier. Today was like lots of work, really very fortunate to be doing what I'm doing. We'd just been stuck in the house. And we just went for a little walk down to the river for like about 15 minutes and just felt happier. Because we were just like, saw the sky, saw some ducks, you know, chatted a bit about stuff that wasn't work or the dishwasher or the bills. And just like, God, that was a lovely little moment. You know, that was just, that's there. In the middle of all this anxiety and having to do a COVID test this morning because, you know, got a bit of a cough and it's like, oh, I'm going to go and see my parents. This isn't great. And in the middle of it, there was this lovely little oasis of like just happiness. And that's what this feels a lot like that for me. And it's just a beautiful piece of music. He's just, it's the best Paul. Which this is, I think this is what this is about, you know, and to tether it back to, not that it's all about the Beatles, but, you know, it's very difficult not to talk about the Beatles because they're the Beatles. All of them pursued having, there was, who was it on your, on this podcast that said the Beatles are, it's an illustration of what happens when you take four ordinary guys and turn them into gods. I love that. And it was a lovely little quote. And they all went to look for different things and found different things that were important to them. And George, it's the spiritual inner and the spiritual outer. That's where he found meaning and sustenance. And, you know, John, destroy the ego, destroy my massive ego to reveal my bones and find out what I'm really about, really take myself apart. And that's how I'll find, I'll understand what life is about if I pull myself to pieces. Ringo was about beans on toast and about how it doesn't make it. Just keep on, just be yourself. Don't worry about it. And Paul, it was about family. That was the thing, wasn't it? It was about home, the minutiae of daily life. Even though his songs aren't kitchen sink dramas, but he understands that the subtle details of who we are around the kitchen sink, you know, are as important as the huge strokes. That the meaning, the understanding of knowing who you are as a person and what you want are often in the smallest actions. It's not just about the massive strokes, you know. It's not about the vast let it be, you know, proclamations of wider power or faith. And it's not about, you know, the epic heartbreak of yesterday or about the drama and Sturm und Drang of Live and Let Die. It's about the little tiny things that we do every day. And I think when you get older, you realise how important those things are. You can reveal yourself in the smallest action, in the little details of, like, this, where we are now. We've been confined, you know, all of us. And those little tiny things, loading the fucking dishwasher. How do you feel about that? Can you divorce that from the other things in the day? It's really turned us in on ourselves, and that's been really difficult, but also has made us look at how we are. And that can be a really good thing, I think. And that's what this feels, this what this record feels about.
And I think it's a perfect way to end 2020 and look forward to better times in the future.
Yeah.
Overall, what would you say this album means to you, and how do you think it fits in the trilogy of McCartney and McCartney 2?
I mean, it's a lovely story that it's the third part in a trilogy, but I don't know. It's a good question. I love he did it on his own. I love for all the things I just talked about, like how it feels now is the right time to be doing this. And I think we needed it. I was really happy when, oh, Paul McCartney's going to do a new record. I was like, good, we need that. I need that. You know, I need to be able to listen to some new Paul McCartney songs. You know, John Le Carré's just died. I was a huge, huge fan of John Le Carré. And it's like, we're never going to get another John Le Carré novel. God, that's sad. That's really sad. That's it now. We're never going to get another one. And this isn't any great comment about Paul's mortality, but like, we've got a new Paul McCartney record, and on it are some absolutely beautiful songs. That's enough. Right now, that is enough.
Yeah.
You know, because anything helps right now, because it's really fucking difficult, isn't it, at times. And I'm very fortunate. We're all well and happy. And I'm feeling like it's very tough. And that's Christmas as well. You know, I'm feeling like it's a very hard time for people that I know and people that I love and many, many people I don't know. So, yeah, a Paul McCartney album is something, a new one I can put on. I can not hear these songs before. I can get to know them now and feel happier because they're there, you know?
Matt Everett, have a happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas to you too, mate. Thank you for asking me on again. I always love doing this. It's a pleasure. And you're great at this. And the podcast is phenomenal. And yeah, thank you for doing them. And I know lots and lots of Beatles fans and just podcast fans are really happy that you do them because they're great. I always enjoy listening to them.
It's true, man.
It's true, man.
See you soon. And thank you.
Love you, mate.